Hello, Vern.
Hello, Vern. How are you?
Not too bad at all. I've got Brian here on the line.
Hello, Vern.
Brian, you rotten kid, how are you?
I'm very good.
What are you doing up this early in the morning?
I have no idea. I have no.
Actually, where are you? Where are you calling from?
I'm in Minnesota, so it's not that
Oh,
bad.
so you're really 3 hours later.
It's 2 hours. Yeah, it's 7:30, so I would have been up
Oh,
anyway.
well, you've had your breakfast already.
I've been up for hours. Not
There
really,
you
but
are.
close enough.
Well, I've been looking at Patterson's Bigfoot all morning. I just having more fun.
The real one or some photos?
Huh?
The real Patterson Bigfoot or the photos?
The one that you sent me, and also there's some shots of it on YouTube. The same footage, it's just variations of it.
Yeah, I think we have what's the best way to describe MK Davis, Brian?
He's a lunatic. No,
Okay.
he's not. He's that's not fair. No, MK is.
Yes, it
he's very, very interested in the Patterson film. He's an enthusiast. That's what he is, and he's been looking at it for a really long time, and he sees a lot of very interesting things in that film.
That
I'll
nobody
bet
else
he
sees.
sees Patterson's Bigfoot even when he's not looking at
I
the
think
film.
he does, yeah.
Oh my God, that could be terrible. Jeez.
But yeah, a lot of the YouTube videos are variations of his enhancements.
Yeah.
Black and white versions and colorized versions and.
Close-ups of the leg muscle and outlining the leg muscle and
Right.
all the rest of it.
Right. What do you think of that? When you look at that, what do you think of that
I
film?
think it's a crummy suit.
Really?
That, and I had a friend who was in the carnival business all of his life, and he had an expression. He'd say, "She ran out of there like a big ass bird." And I for the day I heard it, I started using it, and I would say, "The guy ran down the hallway like a big ass bird," or "He took off like a big ass bird." He didn't really, and there's no such thing as a big ass bird. When I say crummy suit, to me, about 90% of the gorilla suits or Bigfoot suits or any kind of suit is crummy. When I say crummy, I don't really mean it's crummy. It's like, hey, it's a costume. It's just a crummy costume.
Right.
Don't be afraid of that thing. It's just a guy in a crummy costume jumping out at you. It doesn't really mean crummy. I mean, and if you went to build this or have somebody build it for you, you could spend $2,500 easy. And back in the 60s, we made a custom gorilla suit that we charged $3,500 for.
Wow.
And we also sold the mask, the hands, the feet, and the breast, the chest. And our gorilla chest, the first one we made, looked like big tits. But Philip Morris bought a few of those. And then he took a picture of our $3,500, or we could cut it. He took the picture that we used in our ad and reproduced it in his ad and advertised our suit for, I don't know, a fraction of what we were charging. But it wasn't our suit. It was our mask, hands, feet, and chest, and his suit. And that
I see.
picture that you sent me this morning, Paul, is
Yeah.
our mask and hands and feet and chest in a Philip
Ryan, I
Morris.
sent Vern a copy of the photo that was in Greg Long's book of
Okay.
the Philip Morris. Of the Philip Morris gorilla suit.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Philip
So,
Morris was basically taking pieces of yours and
yeah.
attaching it to his and selling it.
Right. And
Okay.
he was a terrible liar at the time because he was showing our $3,500 gorilla suit and saying this is what you're getting. But I called him on it and he wrote this letter of apology that was just falling all over the place and like a big ass bird. And the thing, I just took it and ran it as a full-page ad in Genie magazine where we'd been advertising our big ass gorilla suits. And he was pissed as hell, but that kind of put him in his place. Today he's got a beautiful company, and they make some great gorilla suits. And I take enormous pride in the fact that our gorilla suits were his inspiration. and everything else that he makes, he got ideas from us, from our custom masks and everything. But everybody gets an idea from someplace. And, you know, I think that it doesn't really matter. Are we recording? Are we on the air now?
I record the whole thing.
Oh,
so,
good. Okay.
So, yes, we're recording.
All right, good. Like a big-ass bird.
Like a big-ass bird. That's it. That's going to be the name of the show, the big-ass bird.
That's got to be the name of the show. Bird Langdon is a big-ass bird.
You know you're going to get all the you're going to get all the Thunderbird enthusiasts.
Of course, they'll be just furious. No, but what I was going to say is if all of our troops have been looking, and I am convinced that they have been looking, for Osama bin Laden as long as they've been looking, in much larger areas than Bigfoots have been spotted, wouldn't you think by now somebody would have hit one of these things on the road, would have shot one and killed it, whatever. All I can say to you is, I don't know about you guys, but if I saw Bigfoot and that was anywhere over 3 feet tall and I had a camera in my hand, I would drop that camera and run so fast in the opposite direction that it would make anybody's head swim. Especially if it was as obvious as it is in the Patterson film, that this is not a monkey, this is not a bear, this is not Bozo the Clown in a long black wig. This is the world's first and only Bigfoot. And that Bigfoot, if it was protecting its young, would not be striding away. I said in an email to somebody like Groucho Marx, no, it's more like Jack Benny. It's a Jack Benny walk with just a little Richard Pryor thrown in at one point.
Yeah.
You can see a little jaunt there. And there, you know, I really don't believe it. Somebody emailed me on the blog and said, well, maybe Vern Langdon can show us a better suit, a better crummy suit, you know. All you have to do is type in Charlie Gamora, G-E-M-O-R-A, Charles or Charlie Gamora. And Charlie Gamora was one of the original gorilla men in movies. He and Ray Crash Corrigan. And Crash Corrigan had a big-ass, funny-looking gorilla suit that was a little bit more like the Patterson suit. And Charlie was a little guy. He was about 5 feet one or 5 feet two. And he was Filipino, so he had these beady little eyes. And he would scare the hell out of you in his gorilla costume. Even his daughter was afraid of him. That costume was so realistic. And he made three or four of them over the years. And a friend of mine, Harry Merritt, who was a makeup artist, when he came to Hollywood, Charlie kind of took Harry under his wing. And Harry and Marge lived next door to Charlie and Belle, right off of Melrose Avenue in Hollywood, across the street from Paramount Studios, where Charlie was head of makeup, or head of the lab of makeup, I should say. I think Wally Westmore was head of makeup at the time. And Charlie ran the lab, and Charlie made all of his gorilla suits himself. And Harry would sit on the porch with Charlie ventilating, four or five hairs at a time into this net backing Charlie's gorilla suits. If you want to see an animal costume, you look at Charlie Gamora. And the last film I think he made was Murders, The Phantom of the Rue Morgue for Warner Brothers. I believe it was Warner Brothers. And he played a gorilla in that. He did the close-ups, but he had a stuntman doing his long shots because he'd had a heart attack a year before. And he was and it was a big chore to be physical in that costume.
I bet.
But if you look at that costume in that movie, you want to see a real animal costume. There's one, and that was Well, Charlie started making gorilla suits in the late 20s. He was in Murders of the Rue Morgue with Bela Lugosi. He was in Island of Lost Souls. He was in a lot of films.
On his website, the website I just found on Google, they show him with Laurel and Hardy in a...
Yes, there you are.
Yeah.
There's the man. And if anybody says, well, what, then if that isn't a great animal suit, what is? Charlie Gamora. Well, that's a gorilla suit. That's not a Bigfoot. You're talking about 3 feet difference and about $3,000. If you were going to hire Charlie Gamora today, if he was still here to make you a gorilla costume, he'd probably charge you about, $7,500 to $10,000, maybe more. But there's a gorilla costume. There's an animal costume for you.
A lot of our listeners think that we talk too much about the Patterson-Gimlin film, but since we're talking about it...
Well, they can just turn off their...
They care. They can just listen to somebody else's
podcast.
That's
right. So listen to Cloris Leachman reading the Bible.
You know, I just saw her on Comedy Central last night, and that woman should not be reading the Bible. Anyway...
She's not pretty. I wrote a song once called Why Are You So Ugly, Cloris Leachman? But I swear, one of these days, I've got to put it up on digital, because it's a great song. I'll wait till she's dead.
In your professional opinion, are you saying that the Patterson film, in your opinion, is a guy in a suit? I just want to clarify that.
Yes, I'm saying that.
All right.
And hey, folks that are listening, don't hate me. And don't ever stop looking for Bigfoot or chasing your dreams. Well, there's far worse things out there you could be pursuing.
Oh, that's true.
And I've been chasing my dreams all my life, and I've caught every single one of them. So,
well, could you make it your dream to find Bigfoot then? Because we'd really like to get this thing figured out.
Huh? No, I solved it. When I was talking about it earlier, and I was calling it a crummy suit, I would laugh, and I love Rick Baker, and I love King Kong, the last King Kong. I was crazy about it. I would call that a crummy suit, but it's not a crummy suit. It's a really expensive suit, and it's a marvelous suit. But I just want to establish that with all of you. When I say it's a crummy suit, I'm not saying crummy the way you're hearing it. I'm saying it almost as a compliment. But yes, I think Patterson's thing is a suit, and I think that that whoever's walking in it is pretty funny. I think it's a great gag. I really do. But it's, we've got to believe in stuff. We've got to have, we loved to sit around the campfire when we were kids and have Dad tell us ghost stories. Mm. We're into ghost stories. If I tell you that I saw something that looked like a female mermaid last week on the sand, below where I live, on the beach, and I stared at that thing for 10 minutes, and it didn't move, and I got out of my house, and I got down on the beach in about 2 minutes flat, and I had my camera, and I snuck up on it, and it was a body of a woman, and the lower half of it, was a fishtail, and it was matted with seaweed, and it was half decomposed. And I got about 20 pictures of it, and this wave came up. It was high tide was coming up, and this wave came up and hit me in the back and knocked my camera out of my hand. And the camera went into the water, and that wave washed that body out. And I've been looking for that body all week, ever since. Now, wasn't that fun? Wouldn't you rather hear that than all of the ridiculous crap that's surfacing in the news today? I would. I don't know about anybody else, but I'd much rather hear a story like that. So keep those abominable snowmen and the Bigfoots and all of them coming, because that's an important part of our culture. They didn't have Bigfoot two generations ago. They had the Cardiff Giant. Hmm. They had other things. There's always something. How old is Bigfoot? How far back does Bigfoot go? Bigfoot does not walk like a Madison Avenue executive. And Bigfoot does not look back over his shoulder to be sure the camera's still rolling. No, I think not. But do I think there are big feet out there? I sure do. Hmm. I mean, nobody's found one yet, but that doesn't mean they're not out there. Do I believe in aliens? Hey, I've never seen one, but that doesn't mean they don't exist. And that's a rather comfortable thought, thinking they might.
I think that's what a lot of people are... I think a lot of people are interested in this field because there's always those people who want to feel like they're on the frontier of something, you know, and 150 years ago they could actually be on the frontier, but now there aren't too many frontiers left. So if you really want to feel like you're, you know, doing something that is groundbreaking, you have to be pursuing things like this.
Absolutely. Yeah. And wouldn't it be wonderful if next time they're not a couple of clowns in Palo Alto with a promoter. Wouldn't it be wonderful if next time somebody really had the corpse and it wasn't frozen in a block of ice? You know, I mean, that's the biggest gaffe in the world. This is what really made, I mean, I don't get mad very often. I listened to a lot of crap with Frank Hansen. He bugged us. He wouldn't take no for an answer. He wanted us to make his stupid dummy.
Well, let me just stop you for a second, because this is how we met you. You came to the Bigfoot forums and posted about Frank Hansen is the guy who toured with the Minnesota Iceman.
That's right.
A little background on the Minnesota Iceman story. According to the story, I believe this is true, Paul. You can correct me where I'm wrong.
Sure.
This is an animal that was supposedly shot in the north woods of Minnesota, frozen into a block of ice, and Frank Hansen twittered around the country, at least the upper Midwest. I don't know how far out it got. I hear that it went...
California.
Okay, so it went at least as far as California.
Oh, yeah.
And charged a quarter for you to come in and see this, you know, figure, this hairy man frozen in a block of ice. There's a lot of... The story goes that Sanderson, Ivan Sanderson, and Bernard Heuvelmans saw the thing, they documented the thing, and then there's some controversy about whether or not it was swapped out with a model at some point. So it's one of these tales that just sort of like floats around the Bigfoot world and people talk about it. It's like, what do you think about the Iceman? I don't know. What do you think about the Iceman? Mm-hmm. You're saying, so now you come to the forum. And what's interesting to me, and I'm gonna talk about me a little longer, the similarities between what we were seeing from Tom Biscardi and the boys in Georgia to what Hansen did back in the '60s was remarkable. I thought there was this body that was there trying to freeze it in a block of ice, and it surprised me that people weren't making a connection between those two things, because it seemed to me that that's what they were trying to pull off.
And everything and, old is new again.
So, and that was your impression when you first heard this story.
Oh, instantly, my friend Kelly Mann called me from Arizona, and he was really excited about it. He says, "Have you heard the news? They found Bigfoot," and I just started to chuckle automatically. That's my first reaction to just about anything. Hey, your sister Rose is dead. You know, I'm like that. So he says Bigfoot, and I start to chuckle. And he says, "No, I'm serious. They really found him. Here, go look at this." And I went on the website, and I looked at wherever, CNN or somebody, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I took one look, and I fell down and hurt myself laughing. It was just like, well, see, I was there the first time, so I remember. But if you're 20 or 30 years old, you don't remember.
Yeah.
You just go by what you've heard.
So tell us what happened back then.
Hansen, just what I wrote, Hansen saw us in Famous Monsters, and he figured, oh, these guys can make what I want. And he called, and he said, I'm flying out there. I want to talk to you. And he goes, yeah, right, you're flying out. Sure, he's probably at the bus depot down the street.
He's on the corner.
Right. Anyway, the next day he comes in, and he's about middle age, and a pretty clean-cut looking guy. He could have been a Marine. He could have been a police officer. He could have been a fireman. He was in good physical shape. I remember him. He wasn't a corpulent, drunk-looking person.
Yeah.
He looked like a very respectable guy. And he said, this is what I've got. And he showed us a sketch, which he could have done himself, or he could have had a girlfriend do, or an artist, whatever. It wasn't particularly descriptive, but it was the general idea of the figure with the hand up over the head and all that kind of thing. And one eye popping out, and it kind of looked rather, I don't know, B-movie-ish to me, but I've seen a lot of B-movies. I am a B-movie. Anyway, so I looked at this, and Post came in. He looked at it, and he said, I want to make this thing and freeze it in a block of ice, which is always funny to me anyway. I have ice makes me laugh, because if you start doing stuff with ice, you're asking for a lot of trouble. And we had a friend in the carnival business, Jerry Malone, who owned Little Irvy the Whale. And there's a story unto itself. Anyway. Little Irvy the Whale, I-R-V-Y. Jerry Malone got this idea. He was driving down the coast one day, and he was a salesman. And he sees this sign off the side of the road, almost by the ocean, live shark, 50 cents. And he goes in, and there's a leopard shark in a tank, probably about a foot and a half or 2 feet long, quite a large, for you know, an exhibit, quite a large little shark, you know. And Jerry's looking at this shark. He paid his 50 cents, and he thanks the people, and he leaves, and he's driving down the coast, and he says, you know, they could probably make some real money with that, taking that little shark around the country to people in the Midwest or in other parts of the country that had never seen a shark or never been near the ocean. By the time he got to Los Angeles, or I guess Visalia, where he lived, that shark had grown into a whale in his mind. And Jerry thought, my God, if I could get a whale and freeze it and take it around the country, people would pay millions of dollars to see it. Jerry got an artist friend to sketch out this big truck with this frozen whale in it. He got all of these plans and figured out all of these costs and everything. He became the town joke. He'd walk into the bar for a drink, and one guy said, hey, Jerry, come on over. I want you to tell my buddy about your whale. Ah, wait till you hear this, Ed. And Jerry'd go over, and he'd tell the whole story because he was trying to find financing. One day he found it in an extremely wealthy man in Visalia by the name of George Zerunian, who owned a car dealership, among other things, among many other things. He owned a restaurant in Monterey. He owned all kinds of things. And George said to Jerry, okay, what do you need? And Jerry says, $150,000. And George says, I'll give you the $150,000, but I'll give you a year to pay me back, and you better pay me back. And so Jerry got his $150,000. And the story about how they got, because you just don't go out and kill a whale and put it in a truck. They don't let you do that.
Go to SeaWorld and say, you got any extra whales?
That's right. I'd like that one over there. But you can't do that because whales are protected species. So he had to find one that was dying, that he could somehow get ships on either side of to bring in, and it was a sperm whale that he was looking for. He got a truck that Kenmore, I believe it was Kenmore or Frigidaire, one of the two, built for him, with a refrigeration unit in it. But they also figured with the size and the volume of the whale that if they got a whale and there was any time at all between the time they got it and they got it into the truck, it would start to decompose from the inside out before they could freeze it from the outside in, considering the volume of the whale. Keep this in mind for our later conversation, how to freeze something. Okay, so Jerry figured out they would get a rod, a freezing rod, and when they got the whale, if they ever got it, they'd put that rod through the whale from the mouth to the rear end, and that would start freezing the whale from the inside instantaneously, as well as the refrigeration going from the outside. Well, they almost got a whale, but it wasn't sick enough. It got better and swam away. Now, meanwhile, here's all this equipment and the truck and all these people waiting on the shore down in San Francisco someplace for this big-ass whale.
And it got better.
And it got better. So another 3 months go by, and they find another whale's out there getting sick coming. He's got the Coast Guard involved, everything. They get a whale. By the time they get it in, it's dead. Perfect. They get that whale, and they get it in this big freezer trailer. They get the rod down it, and the thing starts freezing, and everything goes perfect. And Jerry Malone now has his frozen whale. He names the whale after his helper, or his I don't know, his brother-in-law, or Zerunian's relative, or something, Irvy, who worked on the car lot, on Zerunian's car lot. He named the whale Little Irvy in honor of this guy on the car lot. Jerry Malone took that whale around the United States. He played fairs, trade shows, sports shows, everything. He not only made and paid Mr. Zerunian back within 6 months, but he became a multimillionaire within 3 years.
Wow.
And with that, he went on to do Big Boss Truck, which was the biggest truck ever built, ever cab, with tuck and roll leather upholstery and the whole, unbelievable. And it was all painted red, white, and blue. It was a fantastic truck. And he had other things. He had little monkey shows and this and that. And Jerry Malone retired, a multimillionaire, and went to Australia. He got married and became very big in the tire business. And unfortunately was killed in a car crash a couple years ago. God rest his soul. But Jerry Malone was, as far as I know, the first person to freeze something and take it on the road. And I think that's where Frank Hansen got the idea to freeze, if it was, an Iceman.
When was Irvy the whale driving around? I mean, what year do you think that was? That early 60s?
He was driving around in the early 60s.
Okay.
63, 64, 65,
okay.
Like that.
Okay.
It was about the same time. And in the carnival business in those days, there was a trade paper called Amusement Business. It was like Billboard, only geared more to carnivals and circuses and stuff. And if you sneezed, it was on the front page. So everybody knew about it. It was like the internet of the carnival business.
Sure.
So along comes Hansen, and he's got this idea to put this thing in a block of ice. And I thought Little Irvy immediately, but I didn't say anything. And so we went ahead and we looked at it, and we got Johnny Chambers over there because Johnny was doing a wax museum. We did it's called the Hollywood Wax Museum of Canada, and it's up in Canada, and all of their heads are rubber, foam-filled rubber, but it's called the Hollywood Wax Museum of Canada. Anyway, the guy we made it for, the poor man, committed suicide, I understand, and some years later, Alvaro bought his molds, and we also did a King Kong mold that was very large, very huge, and looked ridiculous. The arms were about twice as long as the Rose Bowl football field, but anyway, another big-ass gorilla. And so here's Hansen, and we take two or three looks at what he wants to do, and we figure this is going to be a hoax, and this is going to be a big hoax, and we don't want to get involved in this. So we told him that, and he was dismayed, to say the least. And he said, well, who would you recommend? And we thought, well, this is a prehistoric thing. Howard Ball would be perfect if he'd do it, because Howard created the big dinosaur figures for the La Brea Tar Pits and did a really good job. I think he may have done some stuff for Disney, too. I'm not sure, but anyway, Frank said, will you call him? And, yeah, we'll call him. So we called Howard Ball. Never talked to him before in my life, and I told him what we had, and he said, sure, send him over. So Frank went over and saw Howard Ball, and about, maybe a month and a half, and then we discussed, what are you going to make it out of? And you can't make it out of latex because water attacks latex, and fill it with urethane foam, it just wouldn't stand up in ice. So we talked to a friend of ours in the plastics business, and he recommended hot melt vinyl. Somebody asked me, I think Bigfoot Morph asked me, did you mean vinyl and was it hollow? No, it was solid and it weighed a lot. Vinyl is heavy. Anyway, and you need a metal mold for it, and that's a pain in the butt. So that's a big ass pain in the butt.
So let me clarify something here. When Hansen comes to you, because, of course, part of the mythology around the Minnesota Iceman is that there was a Minnesota Iceman that was replaced with a model.
That came later.
So you're saying this was beforehand. Was he basically telling you exactly what he was going to do? And he did not say there already was a frozen thing. He was trying to create this thing from scratch.
Yeah, he did not tell us it was already frozen and there was a twin or anything like that.
Okay.
He told us that he was going to tour this as an attraction.
Gotcha.
And that's kind. I mean, we really hadn't entered into that phase of our business, because at the time Tate's Curiosity Shop was still very active in Arizona, and they made everything that was dead on the carnival circuit, with the exception of the pickled punks. If you see babies in jars, and they're realistic, that's what they call them, pickled punks.
All anybody
has to do is get a small understanding of the carnival business and what was out on the road in the 40s, 50s, and 60s to understand where a lot of the myths come from and what people will do to get your attention and sell you something. Anyway.
All I know is that if I ever start a punk band, I'm going to call it Pickled Punks.
Pickled Punks. So go look it up on the internet. It's all over the place. I mean, they caught on to it, but they would take, there are people who worked in hospitals and various and sundry other places that would sell these little creatures to anybody that would give them a few bucks.
Huh.
Just like in the old dark days, they sold bodies. Not so old and dark. There was a mortuary corporation in Pasadena several years ago that were harvesting body parts and organs and things and eyes and selling them to the eye bank next door.
Wow.
And they were also selling body parts. And they all went to jail. It's a very commonly known case. Anyway, so here... We send Mr. Hansen over to Howard Ball, and about a month or two later, he comes back with this creature that is flesh-colored and is a little crude, but in ice, it's going to look great. And you could just tell by looking, because ice is not clear.
No.
And there's no way is it clear. And people that I've read... eyewitness accounts, I could see the pores of the skin. I could see the hair growing out of it through the ice. BS. Okay? Well,
the ice is the genius part, isn't it?
I mean, you
give it, it's like seeing it through a cloudy window or something.
That's your smoke and mirrors.
You get it, and then your mind fills in all the little bits and
there
pieces.
There you are. And then 20 years later, when I tell you I saw this thing in ice, It was fantastic. It was almost breathing, and the eye was so bloodshot, and blah, blah. Okay, so you can't use lacquer on hot melt. So he said, well, will you paint it for me? And I said, no, but you're going to need hair, and you can't glue on hot melt either. At least you couldn't in those days. You might be able to now because there's other, they've developed glue. And I think Goldberg, our friend Goldberg, I can't think of his first name, that was the vinyl expert, told me, he says, you know, you can make a glue for it if you use this chemical and that chemical and so forth and so on, and put them all together, and then you can just a little bit and glue. Well, we'd have gone nuts doing that. So we said, take it over to Werner Kepler at Universal. And Johnny called Werner. And I don't remember if Nick Marcellino or Bud Westmore was department head at the time. I tend to think it was Nick Marcellino, but it still could have been Bud, because I dealt with Bud on the Universal Monster Masks. When I got the license, Bud got them on McHale's Navy for us, and a few other things he used them for. And he was, I liked Bud. A lot of people don't, but I did. I thought he was great. But anyhow, he was probably department head at the time. Anyhow, we got him or Werner and sent Frank over with his snowman. And so they made it up with makeup and powdered it down. And then Werner went ahead and ventilated it. And again, he brought it back to us when it was done. And it looked great.
And ventilation, when you say ventilated, that's applying the hair?
It's, yeah, you use a needle. It's almost like a crochet hook.
Okay, okay.
And there was one lady, God rest her soul, Josephine Turner, who gets a screen credit on Planet of the Apes. Josephine Turner hand-ventilated every hair piece for every major character in every one of those films. Hmm. She was the finest wig maker in Hollywood, with lace fronts and a very fine French lace, and you'd ventilate it two or three hairs at a time. And some of the best hair pieces in Hollywood were made by Josephine Turner. And she would make this hair with this French lace look like it was growing out of your bald head.
Wow.
And some of the biggest names in the business wore things by Josephine. Well, Werner was pretty darn good at it, too. And Werner ventilated a few hairs at a time as you get close to the edges. Hmm. You can ventilate 10 or 20 or 30 hairs when you're in the thick of the area.
Right.
Because you don't see that part of it. But Werner did that. And so when he brought it over, it looked great. And he said, I'm going to take it down and have it put into ice. And I said, where are you going? He said, I don't know. There's some ice companies. I said, go to Union Ice. They're huge, and they're on Highland. I think they were on Highland and Santa Monica. Anyway, I think the building is still there, but it's a nightclub now. and they've kept the building. It's just, you know, it's like a big dance club. He took the thing down there and had it frozen, and they did a perfect job. And then, of course, he put it in a tank. The big block of ice is in a tank, and that is basically a freezer. And he would close the lid on it when he was traveling, and it would work just like a freezer. And that's how he kept it on the road. Now, in the meantime, let's go back to little Irvy for a moment. Irvy's out there on the road for 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 or 12 years, and one day the power source fails that they're pulling to keep the freezer going.
Uh-oh.
And not only that, but Jerry's backup generator failed and broke down. And Jerry's going nuts trying to find a power source to take care of little Irvy. Meanwhile, little Irvy is starting to defrost. Well, by the time
Jerry
got everything set up and reconnected and all that, little Irvy was half thawed.
No.
And Jerry said, oh no, this is the end of little Irvy. It wasn't. Little Irvy was freeze-dried by the years of freezing. And Jerry discovered at that point he didn't need the refrigeration anymore because the whale was freeze-dried. Okay, keep that in mind. So here we have Frank Hansen running around the country with his thing in ice. And now the heat's on. And Argosy does the story. And Ivan Sanderson comes up and says, I've seen it, and there's no doubt in my mind, but it's the real thing. Ivan Sanderson said that, ladies and gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
Ivan Sanderson, an expert in his field, the same man that a few years before said that there were 15-foot-tall penguins that left very large footprints in the sand at the beach. This is the man that said that Bigfoot is, really, they found footprints on a Florida beach. On a Florida beach, and Mr. Sanderson said the footprints were from a 15-foot penguin.
Hmm.
How about that? Now, I'm going to send you the link as I'm talking about it, because you won't believe it otherwise. But there you see, we're talking about somebody who has seen a few other things and is very quick to say, yes, I believe in it. So anyway, Jerry is getting a lot of attention that he doesn't want. And the question arises from somewhere. Well, he's transporting a dead body over county lines.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a federal offense of sorts. I think you can go to jail for doing that. I'm not sure, but all of you in your different states, check it out and see what the punishment is. Jerry somehow manages to be in Los Angeles rather quickly as the heat is on, and he says, I want to have dinner with you. So I said, fine, you can take me to the Magic Castle. And he said, great. So we go to the Magic Castle, of which I'm a member, and we're sitting there. And we go through the small talk. And then Jerry says, you know, I have to tell you, the true story is that somebody found this creature in, I think he said, China, and it was in a block of ice and out in the, wherever, the Arctic, and they got a hold of it, and somebody sold it to me, and it was the real thing. It was the dead body, and I have that in my possession, but it's hidden away, and when I decided to tour it, I realized I'd be transporting a dead body, so I had a duplicate made of it, which I came to talk to you about. And with that, I put my napkin down on the table. And I suddenly got really mad, because you can't kid a kidder. All right? I mean, you just can't. I have what my former wife and I laugh about. She has it, too. We call it a built-in shit detector. And when you start with the funny stories, the antenna goes up, and I know whether you're telling the truth or not. And when he started on this bullshit, I put my napkin down. I looked over at the waiter, the check, please, waiter. Give it to Mr. Malone. I got up and walked out. That's the last time I ever saw that, or not Malone, but Hansen. That's the last time I ever saw Frank Hansen. I don't believe that story for a minute.
Hmm.
I don't believe there's another body. And I know the body that was made for him, and that's the body that he's always had. And I don't know if he's still alive or not. I'd be curious. If he's not, maybe there's another body in a block of ice out in the barn, and maybe it's Frank Hansen.
Hmm. Yeah, there are Frank Hansens in Minnesota, but of course you don't know if it's the same one until you call him.
Well, aren't you the least bit curious?
I am. Well, I didn't look until this morning, so yes, I am. But it never occurred to me. I always forget that we have the power of Google before us.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, he must be, he's probably 85. or maybe even 90, but he was a healthy specimen. So he could still be around.
He's preserved in a block of ice, probably.
I think he's in the barn.
That's the way.
It's just a dummy. But now, seriously, if you had that thing in a block of ice and it was real, wouldn't you give it to science? Wouldn't you turn it over to the proper authorities to say, look, I mean, I can keep this all for myself, or I can share this with the world.
Well, minimally, you would sell it to the proper authorities, right?
I mean, I would, yeah. But,
yeah, if
I mean,
you were interested in getting
I'd
the
give
cash.
It to them. I'd be thrilled to death to be a part of
history. Oh, sure, sure.
In that respect.
Mm. Sure.
And I say that about anybody who says, and I've looked at some of the stuff that's on YouTube and refreshed my memory with the Patterson Bigfoot. Any of those people that say they saw this or they saw that or they found it. There's one on YouTube now that they come upon a dead Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks pretty good, I must say. It still looks like a crummy suit, but it looks pretty good. Would you not at that point, as bad as it smelled, either pick it up and put it in your trunk and take it in, or you sit here with it, I'm going to go get the cops. That's what I'd do.
That's what I would do as well. Yeah.
And I think anybody that wouldn't do that is feeding us a line of crap.
Sure. But, of course, Hansen covered part of this story in himself, and it's part of the mythology of the whole story. One of the stories that he told was that he never owned the real body. That was owned by some strange, unnamed person that... discovered the body in Hong Kong
brought
it to the United States. And the story goes that it was found floating in the sea by Chinese fishermen.
This is the problem with it. This is not unlike the story. I mean, if this Georgia thing had actually developed along the same lines and had lasted as many years as the Iceman story, there is no story. There's like, oh, well, actually, it's from Vietnam. Oh, no, it's from Hong Kong. Well, no, it's from the Northwoods of Minnesota. Like, well, what is it? You know, it has to be from something.
Well, that night at dinner, he told me he owned it. He bought it, and he brought it over here. And then he realized that he had something he really shouldn't have. So he had that in storage, too. But the real one is out on the road. And then later I heard another variation of it, that he had the actual thing itself in ice. And then when he realized that there was trouble afoot, he had the copy made. So he already had it in ice. The real McCoy,
right,
when he came to us, if you believe that story, in which case he should have just taken a picture of the real McCoy and thought it out.
Well, especially if you guys were saying that you weren't interested in perpetrating a hoax, if he had said, well, it's not really a hoax, you know, here's the thing. I mean,
exactly.
Yeah.
But he didn't. And all of these recreations of his revisionisms came out later.
Right.
And you can see it just down the line. And he's sort of stumbling and stammering. And no, that didn't happen. This is what happened. Well, here's the real story and blah, blah, blah. And it's not, it just doesn't work. It doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
Not shit detector.
Yeah. I mean, again, the similarities between that and the Georgia story. Oh, we shot it. We tracked it. No, we found it.
Right.
You know, put up enough smoke and mirrors and nobody will ever know what the truth is.
Of course. But, you know, when you watch those guys, I've seen them on an interview, and they're six sandwiches short of a picnic. they really, I mean, you got to be kind of a little wacky to get up in front of people and try and pull this off, especially today.
Yeah.
It's a very old gag.
Well, and the especially today, because by the time these guys were on Fox News and CNN headline news live, it had already been debunked on the internet. Yeah. I mean, people had found the mask. They'd made the comparisons. It was obviously not real. I mean, it was obviously not real for all kinds of reasons, but they'd found the actual costume. They knew the retail price of it, right?
Yeah.
And now these guys are on the news telling the world is behind, the world doesn't know yet that it's a fake. But anyway, the audacity of thinking that you could pull something like this off in today's day and age.
It's ridiculous, but you get somebody every now and then that comes along and has the Devil's Child or has the Fiji Mermaid or any number of gaffes, as they're called in Carnival. They're called gaffes, and there's something to make money on, get the people interested. They're a lot better than what they used to do, where they'd take a little person like Schlitzie, who was retarded, and put him on live display. And they did that. And there were state laws in California that went back to the early 20s that prohibited the exhibiting of deformed or otherwise impaired people for money. So it was on the books, and it's been on the books forever. There have been other states that along the way have picked that up. So the more that developed, the more it became easier to just get a block of wood and carve something out of it,
right,
put it behind glass,
right,
and say it was a King Tut's mummy, and put that on the road. Besides which, they didn't have to feed it or pay it anything. And that's where a lot of this stuff came from originally, really. But when you hear that there's a Yeti on Space Mountain at Disneyland that jumps out at you, don't you want to go to Disneyland?
Oh, yeah.
And see that thing? It's not a Yeti. It's a guy in a suit. But it just, there's something neat about that. It's like the old dark rides, things jumping out at us at the amusement park. Scare me. Come on, scare me. That's the fun of it. And that's what we really love. And there may be anthropologists that are running up one side of the street and down the other looking for Bigfoot to this day. I'm sure there are, and they'd be thrilled to death to find one. And I'd be thrilled to death if they found one. I think it'd be great. I really do. But
so,
I don't think it's terribly likely, but I think it would be great. And I'm not saying that they don't exist. I believe they do. And when I say I've seen them, I have. I've seen Frank Hansen's, and I've seen the one that John made for Jerry Malone. I've seen them. They're Yetis. They're Bigfoot. They're not real. But what's real and what isn't real? When you're in my business and you've got my mind, I live in my mind. My whole world is in my mind. It is. And I can hear a 48-piece symphony orchestra right now in my mind playing something that I'm making up. And I can envision a 15-foot-tall Bigfoot crashing through brush somewhere. I can see all of that. And there are people that believe if you can see it and you can visualize it, then it exists. That's a storyline in itself that you really could debate for all eternity. Well, we'll be able to do that someday. We'll be able to project ourselves into the forest 1,000 miles from here, and God knows what we'll find. So I'm not poo-pooing Bigfoot. I'm just poo-pooing the Patterson suit, that's all.
And you're not the only one.
I guess not.
What I want to know is when Frank Hansen was traveling around the country with this Iceman, you're sat at home knowing what it is. I think I know the answer to this, but why didn't you phone the local newspaper and say, oh, we told him where to go and get that made?
If I phoned the local newspaper, then I would be putting the focus on me. And it's not about me, it's about him. We didn't make it, and we weren't involved with it. And I, when the shit hit the fan, so to speak, with Mr. Sanderson and Argosy magazine, nobody from Argosy contacted us about an interview. If they had, I would have told them. If you'd asked me, I would have told you. But I have to say to you that while Frank Hansen was parading this thing of his around the country, we weren't sitting there reading the latest issue of Amusement Business to see what town he was in and how much money he made, although those returns were often published in Amusement Business. We were dealing with screwballs that would come in that wanted us to make a female front for them that they could fill with water so the breasts would jiggle. We had a guy come in and wanted us to make a tarantula suit that would fit over his Volkswagen so he could drive a 50-foot tarantula down the Hollywood freeway. We had a guy come to us, and a young man who obviously had come into a lot of money, and make a head of his favorite movie actor and paint it and put hair on it and everything. And we did. And 2 weeks later, he called and he said, some of the paint's come off. Can I bring it back and have you retouch it? And we said, sure, bring it over. And he brought it over, and all the paint had been rubbed off the lips of the kid. That's the kind of thing we were dealing with on a daily basis, plus trying to turn out anywhere from a gross to 15 gross of Frankenstein masks or ball caps or all of our Universal characters. So we didn't have a lot of time to sit around and follow up on what happened to Crazy Frank and his rubber Bigfoot. And so by the time all of that publicity had hit, it was past that point, because he became old news pretty fast. People began to figure out what that was all about. And there really wouldn't have been any point. I think we mentioned it in a couple of articles along the way, but I think it could have been after I left Don Post Studios. I was only there from 63 to 69. And from there I went to do Planet while I was at Post. And then I did all five Planets plus the TV series. And I was in charge of color control on every single appliance that was put on every single actor, because the makeup artists would vary in their daily application, even though they were given three basic colors to work with. Those basic colors varied when you're doing highlight, and they found very quickly that the color on the apes' faces was changing as you'd be watching the apes' faces.
Right.
So they said, hold it, we got to get somebody in here that delivers to us every single day exact color combinations on these appliances. So then all our makeup artists had to do, it was still 3 hours, 4 hours, was to glue the appliance on the actor's face, lay the hair around the stippled edges, and do a little touch-up around the eyes, and instead of making up the whole piece. I was the guy in the lab that hand-colored every single appliance for five movies. So I had a little bit more to do from 4:30 in the morning to later 9 at night than to track Frank Hansen and his success or failure and call the papers and blow the whistle on him. He was the farthest thing from my mind. And if you've seen as many monkey suits and gorilla actors and B-movies and carnival attractions as I have, they all tend to blend together. That's why I didn't get really excited when Kelly called me and said, they found Bigfoot. I just laughed, and then I said, which one did they find this time?
So while we're talking about Planet of the Apes, and you said you worked on makeup on all five movies. Now, when we were talking yesterday, I said that complete chance I'd been watching Battle for Planet of the Apes that morning. And
that is just weird. I'm going to say that right.
Yeah. Well, we started out with $1 million makeup budget on the first one, and then Arthur Jacobs kept cutting back. And every film after the first one there was less money spent on makeup. And it
Well, that's
suffered
fairly
because that
obvious.
was the whole crux of the movie.
But the question I've got about it is that when you watch the first movie, and even the second movie, you get the impression that the apes, the chimpanzees especially, are a sort of evolved version of a chimpanzee. That they're not like the chimpanzees that we have today. And that's what you expect from the first couple of movies. And then we get to the later movies where the action then moves to the present day or the near future. And they seem to be portraying these chimpanzees as being exactly like the chimpanzees you'd have in the Bronx Zoo.
Now,
was that the intention all along?
Are you talking about the remake that Rick Baker did?
No. No, I'm talking about the original movies.
All right.
The particularly the last two movies, you see both your chimpanzees and real chimpanzees, and nobody in the movie seems to point out that they're different.
Now,
were they trying to make them look like real chimpanzees?
That's an old Bigfoot application called artistic license. It originated with Bigfoot.
Because, as I said, the first couple of movies, you look at them as being evolved chimps.
Yeah, but they didn't put a chimp next to them per se.
No.
And the minute you do that, it's kind of like guys that go around doing W.C. Fields impressions. Ah, yes. Every man should believe in something. I believe I'll have another drink. Thank you. Hey, that's not a bad W.C. Fields impression until you run a little clip of W.C. Fields talking. And the minute you do that, you go, that's the worst Fields impression I've ever heard in my life. So when you put a Planet of the Apes chimp next to a real chimp, you sit there and you say, wait a minute, that's not a chimp. What the heck is that all about? Well, those makeups were designed for human beings, not for chimps. And we got as chimpy as we could, John did, in designing them, while still making them workable. They had to talk and deliver their lines, which was still kind of difficult to do, mm-hmm. and still a little muffled. By the time you got to Baker's Planet of the Apes, you wondered, why don't they just use subtitles? I can't understand half of the dialogue. Somebody actually suggested that, and I think that's a great idea. But that's what happens. That's what you run into in the movie business. You might be a third of the way through the film before you realize you should have done this or this or this, and now it's too late and you're locked in. You'll see a movie where the pen jumps from the guy's left pocket to his right pocket while he's talking.
Yeah.
Just because who was watching continuity screwed up, didn't pay attention. So you're dealing with things like that in film, but that's why I say to these people on your website, and I must say, I'm enjoying each of them because they come with a really great attitude. Mm. And they're not bitchy, they're not nasty. They're interested in talking to me.
Keep breathing. Give them time.
if anybody gets that way with me, it doesn't last too long.
The bitchy and nasty ones haven't found you yet. I don't know.
I used to be a professional wrestler. Remember that? I say to anybody, "You got a problem? Come on over. We'll settle it." I still know a few tricks they don't. But anyway. I think that the most important thing to keep in mind is that in makeup for film, you're looking at a human face on the screen that may be the full size of the screen. In Planet of the Apes, the first time you see that ape, that's a shocker. Mm-hmm. And every hair had to be in place. Every detail to make that thing look alive. That's what people in film do for a living. To the best of their ability, they make as close to perfect as they can. And all my life, and anything I've done, I've tried my very hardest to make it perfect. Because that's how I was raised, And that's how I was taught, by the people, by my parents, and by the teachers that I was lucky enough to study with. So it's kind of like, if your dad tells you to mow the lawn today, why don't you do the best job you possibly can? And then he won't make you mow it again because you screwed up. So when I call a suit a crummy suit, I don't mean it's that bad. But what I am saying is, when I look at that suit or any other suit or any other makeup, I'm looking for perfect. And I'm very hard to work for. I'm an easygoing guy, and I've got a good sense of humor. But don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining. I'm very demanding of people that work for me, because I'm even more demanding of myself. And I've seen perfection too many times. Charlie Gamora loved gorillas. He'd go to the zoo and spend days studying gorillas.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'd go back and work on his little gorilla costume. And he was the most popular monkey man in the movie industry. People loved him because of his dedication. And he was the kind of artist that they needed Blue Boy and Pink Lady for a film, big, huge paintings of them. And Charlie went in and looked at them and took the little paintings in and duplicated those. You couldn't tell they weren't the originals for the film in a matter of days. He was that sharp an artist and that much of a perfectionist. And so when I look at something, I'll tell you pretty darn quick whether it's legitimate or not. And some of the people that have speculated on those theoretical animals, I'm surprised at their conclusions, because in a couple of cases I know who they are. They're pretty intelligent people, but their antenna wasn't up. And I think Ivan Sanderson, for all of his 15-foot-tall penguins, studied long and hard to get where he got. And I think he was taken seriously in his profession as one who knew. And I'm very surprised when he came to the conclusion he came to about Frank Hansen's creature.
You know, I think that, and I don't know what Sanderson was thinking, obviously, but I think that so many people have waited for so long for someone to drag one of these things out of the woods that I think there's a tendency to acknowledge, maybe in the back of your mind, the little warning bells are going off, but you want it so bad and you expect it to be there. So, and like, now is as good a time as any for it to happen.
Yeah.
I think you tend to let the warning bells sort of drift to the back, and you say, well, you know, other people are saying this thing could be real. And I don't know, maybe he just got swept up in it. Maybe he wanted it to be real so badly.
I think so. Yeah. I think that's the probability.
Yeah.
But if I were he and I were a scientist, I would say to the man with the thing in the ice, look, you've got to let us drill into the back. We won't disturb your display.
Yeah.
We won't unfreeze it, but just give us some DNA.
Right.
And any guy that's half an American would say, I'll do it for my country.
Right.
And Frank Hansen was in the service of his country and a retired officer when he came to us. And his hoax, that bothered us no small amount, was not an honest hoax, and that disturbed us too. So there were lots of reasons that we didn't enter into it with him. Could we have done it? Yes. We could have sculpted the figure easily, and we could have gone to Tori Smith, who made our metal molds for our vinyl masks, and Tori could have done the mold, and we could have made the creature. We'd have still had to have Werner or somebody make it up for us and ventilate it, because we did not do ventilation. So that we couldn't have done the finishing. But we certainly could have created. Sam Goldberg is the guy I was trying to think of, who was in the vinyl industry. I'd love to find him. He's a wonderful guy. And And he's the one that advised us to use vinyl and hot melt, not latex.
Not latex.
And urethane. He knew all about that.
What do you suppose Hansen paid for that thing, all in? When he was all said and done, what do you suppose it cost him?
I would guess in that day, which would have been the 60s,
mm-hmm.
we probably would have charged him $5,000.
Wow.
And Howard Ball would have probably charged him $5,000, maybe $6,000, depending on how long it took.
That's a whole lot of money in 1963.
It's a lot of money, but that's, you know, I've heard that argument before. My lawyer charges a lot of money. My dentist charges a lot of money. My doctor charges a lot of money. If you had to put your hand up somebody's butt, you'd charge a lot of money, too. If you had to deal with their dirty teeth, you'd charge a lot of money, too. If you have to sit there and listen to their bitching and moaning about how their wife screwed them over, you'd charge them a lot of money, too. It's not easy sculpting, and it's not easy working in clay, and it's not easy getting a likeness. And getting what the customer wants is an ass pain.
Sure.
Because the customer is going to come back and say, well, I didn't want the fingers like that. I wanted them more like this. I mean, so many people in that business, at least in my day and age, I don't know how they're doing today because I don't stay in touch with any of them. But in my day and age, the toughest part of any job was estimating what it was going to cost you in time, labor, and materials to create. And 9 times out of 10, you'd say $2,500 and it would wind up costing you $3,000.
Right, right.
So you learned to bid high.
Right.
Even though you were afraid you were going to lose the job. But I would think, like in our case, we didn't even bid to Frank because we didn't want to do it. But I would think Howard Ball probably got, I hope he got at least $5,000, and I hope really that he got $7,500. And then I hope Werner, I know Werner, and Werner and Bud Westmore would have gotten another $5,000 because they're professionals in the studios. In studios, you make an incredible amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't need to do something for somebody for $100 to $200. That's another part of my Patterson suit answer when people to this day say, oh, Johnny Chambers made the Patterson suit. The hell he did.
Yeah.
Patterson couldn't afford Johnny Chambers for 5 minutes, let alone to make that suit. And anybody with a half of a knowledge would tell you the same thing. I've heard from a couple people in the business, well, Johnny Chambers made that suit. Those people are either suffering from amnesia or they're not too bright to begin with. Johnny Chambers wouldn't touch anything for less than $5,000. And more often than not, $10,000, because he was one of the top paid craftsmen in the business, and he had more work than he could handle, half of which was for the United States government, who you don't put on hold.
Well, it's one of the things about people who make claims like that about the suit is Patterson was not rolling in cash. And I could never figure out when people made the claims such as you just said. I don't know why any of those people in Hollywood would work with him. I mean, he would have come in as some sort of like two-bit, you know, guy off the street who had this cockamamie idea to film a Bigfoot. I've heard these stories, but no one's ever been able to draw the line and say, here's how it happened and here is specifically who we talked to. I don't care who could have done it. There's lots of guys who could have done it.
That's right.
But nobody ever said it was this guy and here's why and here's the cancel check or whatever. You know, there's never that connection.
No, there never would be either. There were a couple of people in Hollywood that might have done it if they had the ability, but they didn't have the ability. I mean, you can always find somebody that's going to do something for a few dollars less than you are. There's always going to be somebody that'll cut your price. But in Hollywood, if you're talking about the kind of people that would put a suit like that together that would have the knowledge. At the time, Johnny didn't have that much knowledge about ape suits. He's not a costumer.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, you're talking about two different things.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about somebody that sews the costume, like our Peggy Clinton. Peggy was a natural. She trimmed skinhead wigs. And one day I said, we're going to make a gorilla suit. And Peggy says, I can do that. I can do that. And I said, can you really? Yeah, I can do that. I know how to do that. I said, you never made one before. No, but I know I can do that. And son of a gun, she did. And she sewed all of our gorilla suits. Well, any costumer, any good costumer that sews could put that together for you. Any good costumer. And some good taxidermists could put that together for you. And when I'm looking at the Patterson thing, that doesn't look like hair cloth. It's certainly not plush. It looks like either bear or it could be yak. It could be a monkey gorilla hair, but I don't think so. I think it's another kind of animal skin.
So you think it's real fur?
I think it's, yeah, definitely. I think so. I really do. And it's not badly made. When I say it's a crummy suit, I've explained to you what I mean
mm-hmm.
by that.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't really crummy. When I was 10 years old, I'd have killed for that costume. I mean it. I was looking for the perfect gorilla costume when I was 10. I'd see the Charlie Gamora on the screen, and I'd figure, well, Spotlight Costumes up in Berkeley says they've got a gorilla suit for $100. And I went up and looked at it, and it looked like pajamas made out of plush. With a terrible paper mache head. And I made a gorilla costume for Ben Toussaint, the great Toussaint, Bedlam of Horrors, his Midnight Spook Show. And geez, mine was 10 times better than that thing up at Spotless Stagecraft. It used to be called Stagecraft Studios in Berkeley. And Harry and Al Margolin ran it, and they were costumers. But there are costume shops all over. Anybody can make you something.
What did you ever?
If you shoot it through grainy 16mm film, you're shooting it through ice.
Sure. Did you ever come across it or meet anybody within Hollywood or the costume industry that had mentioned being approached by Patterson?
No. And there was one guy that was really a... We'll just say he was a character. His name was Mickey Myers. And Mickey had a little costume shop in Hollywood. And Mickey was an interesting character. And he had a gorilla suit that was made out of hair. And as I recall, it was horse hair. And Don Post, early on, had made Mickey a head for it. Out of burlap and latex. Latex enforced, burlap enforced latex, okay? So it'd be hard to tear. Don did a few of those kinds of things for burlesque gorillas, the Monster and the Maiden. There's a couple of Monster and Maiden videos on YouTube. One's the Frankenstein Monster, which uses Don's Frankenstein mask that Pat Newman sculpted for Joe Karsten spook shows. And the other one is a terrible gorilla costume. But it just shows you. There are a few pictures. If you go around to photograph collector shops of burlesque gorillas that are pretty interesting. And some of them are spit and baling wire, and a couple of them look pretty good. There was a company in New York called Brooks Van Horn Costumes. I don't know if they're still around or not. They made all the costumes for Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus. And I just happened to think, this is an approximate year now, but we're talking about probably... 1955. My father was still alive, and he was killed in 59. So it would have been before 1959 that we went to San Francisco to see Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey at the Cow Palace. And there was an act that was all guerrillas, and they were a foreign act, a German act. And the suits were made in Germany, and I wanted to see the suits. So my dad took me backstage, and we met a couple of the acrobats. And they were a wonderful team of acrobats. And there must have been about, I would say, 15 to 20 of these acrobats wearing these gorilla suits. And they were long, dark hair that would have either been horse hair or yak hair. And as I recall, they were horse hair. And the faces, the gorilla faces, were plastic, as in vacuum form. And then, mind you, this is the 50s. They seem to be plastic. They could have been paper mache, but I don't think so. I believe they were plastic vacuum form. And they were like flocked gray and darker colors with almost white highlighting. So they'd read from in a large arena. Anybody, including one of those acrobats, could have left the show with one of those costumes, or anybody could have bought one of those costumes from one of those acrobats at the end of the season. We have no idea whatever happened to all those costumes, but they were in the United States, and they were darn good-looking gorilla costumes that if you trimmed them down or spruced them up or whatever, could easily be a Bigfoot. So there's any number of sources for costumes that could be converted. A bear costume. We had a guy come to us one time. He was a very interesting fellow. A young man, about 20, and he was deaf. And he spoke nonetheless. And he had a very strange speech pattern, as some deaf people often do. And he wanted us to restore his costume. And he came in with a lion's skin. And it was a real lion's skin and a head, a taxidermied head. And it looked sort of like a lion rug. You remember how some animal collectors would have the big lion or the big zebra in front of the fireplace? It looked like that. But if you put it on over your shoulders and put the head on top of your head, like a hat or a helmet, it would be sitting there. You'd consider it a lion costume. And there wasn't anything we could do with it. But I was surprised that the skin had stayed as supple as it had. And I got out of him that he'd bought it from a taxidermist. But that's about all I could really get out of him. And we didn't do anything with it because we couldn't. But there are things like that that are available. And if you bought a couple of bear skins at a garage sale or whatever and sewed them together. I've noticed with the Patterson suit, there's a place where just above the butt in back as he's walking away that almost looks like the top half of the suit is one part and the bottom half of the suit is another part.
Yeah.
So you pull on the pants first, and then you put on the rest of the suit, and it comes down to a point. It kind of looks like that, but there's really no way of telling unless you were standing right there with that character or that creature, whether it's a costume or not. There really isn't. Let's face it, for all of the experts that could talk about the muscle movement, I could show you costumes that do the same thing. And or not. I mean, it could be lucky. And yet, when you get those close-ups and you see that, it's either been enhanced or helped along, or maybe that's real muscle. But you still can't tell by looking at that film. Not if you're honest with yourself.
I think that the line that you point out, people have seen that, and it is one of sort of those things that you can spin either way. I mean, I've heard people spin it just the way you did, say, well, that looks like where the top of the suit meets up with the bottom of the suit. I've also seen people find images of gorillas and say that, well, they've got a little roll of fat right there, so who knows, maybe.
Yes, but it all comes down to one thing. I don't know how many of you remember Carl Ballantyne or not. The great Ballantyne, world's greatest magician. He did a fantastic comedy magic act. He started out as a straight magician, mm-hmm. but he wasn't that good, and people had been playing clubs, and drunks would yell at him, ah, shove the bunny where the sun never shines, and like that. Finally, he got tired of it, and he started doing comedy magic. And he'd go, you know, I'm going to produce 1,000 pigeons from my leg. And he reaches up, he rolls up his pant leg, and he's got a paper bag with a garter around his calf. And he pulls the paper bag out. He says, don't laugh. You have bags in your pants, too. And stuff like that. And great stuff. And one of the things he did was the cut and restored rope. And he's got a basket. And he pulls out a piece of rope, and he cuts the rope in half. He says, see, two hunks of rope. He throws them back in the basket, waves the magic wand over the basket, reaches in and pulls out the rope, completely restored. He says, see, there it is, a restored rope. And then he says, what was that? Oh, and he reaches in the basket, pulls out the other two that he cut. He says, see, two hunks of rope. How else? Well, a guy in a costume. How else? Well, maybe not. Maybe Bigfoot really is out there. But the only ones I've seen are the ones I worked on, and they were real, and who knows? I would just be as tickled as anybody to see the real McCoy. Is Patterson an Irish name?
I don't know. That's a question
Do a little research on that. Having a bit of Irish in me myself, there's always the old Blarney Stone. I never met an Irishman yet that wasn't tempted to throw a good hoax.
I don't know, Paul. What do you think about that?
No, I've never been tempted. at least not this week.
I don't know, but now I'm not gonna trust anything you say to me ever again.
Don't.
Like you ever do.
No, that's true. I don't. Well, Vern, we're pushing 90 minutes on this one, and I want to thank you a lot for spending the time and sharing your recollections with us. This has been very entertaining and very informative, I think.
I love it. I love the chance to do it. I'm sure half of your listeners are tickled to death with me, and the other half want to see me dead.
that's probably
but,
true.
Hey, that's the way the cookie crumbles.
Yeah.
And some of us will never forgive you for Star Wars Holiday Special.
No.
I won't forgive me for Star Wars Holiday Special.
I remember I was 11 and I thought it was crap.
Well, all I can tell you is that money helped us put in the swimming pool. We were there for very long hours. And you know what? That's what it all boils down to sooner or later. And it helps a lot if you love what you're doing.
Oh, sure.
Because, you know, that way you get everything done. And that's the wonderful thing about it. And I've spent my life chasing down my dreams and doing them. I change course every 5 or 6 years, but I've had a wonderful time at it. And if you do what you love, then you'll always be well and you'll always be happy. And your hard work will pay off, and you'll have fun doing it. And that's the main thing. And for all of the money I've been paid or not been paid over the years, I've had so far, knock on wood, I've had a great life. And I fully intend to continue having that. And that's what I heartily recommend everybody do. And don't take anything too seriously.
But especially in this field, that's good advice.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again for spending the time with us.
Thanks,
guys.
It.
Thank you.
Thank you. And watch out for that big ass bird.
Well, he said, listen, one big ass bird after another. Keep looking for Bigfoot.